I'm Marianne Carberry, and I'm here in the studios of WXXI. Welcome, Kim Kawaki, to WXXI. We are thrilled to have you here to talk about the 2017 La Delenia competition, a competition for singing actors coming up on Saturday, April 22nd in Kilburn Hall at the Eastman School. Kim Kawaki is president of the Kurt Weill Foundation, which sponsors the event every year. Kim, glad to have you here. Can you tell us about this year's La Delenia competition?
Well, this year's competition is going to be very special, first of all, because it is the 20th competition. It's actually the 19th that's being held at Eastman because the second one was in Germany. And so there was none in the United States that year. I started the competition in 1998, which was the centenary of La Delenia's birth in Vienna. And it was also the year that all of Kurt Weill's holograph scores that he had written in Germany came to the Sibley Music Library. So you can still go over to the Sibley Music Library and see the Three Penny Operas manuscript that Weill wrote out.
Fabulous. And we should mention that La Delenia was the wife of Kurt Weill.
Correct.
Hence the connection.
His wife twice, because they got divorced in 1933 and remarried in the United States in 1937.
And was well known for her interpretations of his music, a very major figure back when she was performing in her time.
Especially in Berlin from about 1928 to 1932, she was very well known as an actress and in the Weill Brecht shows, but even more so in the 1950s and 60s in America, because she was Fräulein Schneider in Cabaret.
Right.
And she was probably best known to everyone as Colonel Klebb in From Russia with Love, the villainess who tried to attack James Bond with the stiletto in her shoe.
Everybody's going, oh, now I know who she is.
Exactly.
And for those who may not be familiar with Kurt Weill, we'll just mention a couple of hits that he had. He had some big hits in the 50s that really made him popular to a greater audience.
Well, his most famous song is Mack the Knife, which sold 10 million records in a few years after Bobby Darin and Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra all recorded it and went to the hit parade. September Song, right. Speak Low, Lost in the Stars. Those are some of his biggest single songs, but he was mainly a theater composer. So he was known for the Three Penny Opera, Lady in the Dark, One Touch of Venus, Street Scene. Eastman Opera just did Street Scene 3-4 years ago. So people who are listening may have seen that production.
Right. I was there. It was wonderful. This being the 20th year of the competition, you have some, I understand, outstanding contestants who are coming. Tell us about the contestants this year.
Well, this year we have an incredibly diverse group. First of all, the age eligibility for the competition ranges from 19. You can't be under 19. You can't be older than 32. And so we have contestants for the first time filling that entire range from 19 to 32. There's a young woman from Paris who's 19 who has already been seen in the major professional theaters in Paris. And we have several who are 32 who already have established careers as opera singers and musical theater singers. We also have competitors in the finals from four foreign countries, Mexico, Austria, Canada, and France. And the original pool of 266 contestants that were in the first round hailed from 17 countries and 31 states. So this little competition that the first year was confined just to Eastman Voice students has now become a major international phenomenon.
Well, is there one also from Tel Aviv?
Yes, but she resides in Austria because she sings at the Theater an der Wien in Austria right now.
Wow. I remember she was scheduled to come last year, and then she had to step aside. She couldn't be here last year, so I'm looking forward to seeing her.
Exactly. She's already a major singer in Europe, and she was singing at the Toulouse Opera House last year, and they wouldn't let her out of a rehearsal to come to the competition.
Okay, and tell us about the prizes. I understand you're upping the ante quite a bit.
This year, for the first time, in honor of the 20th competition, the top prize goes to $20,000 for the winner, $15,000 for runner-up, and $10,000 for third place, and then a number of discretionary prizes ranging from $3,500 up to $5,000.
It's always very exciting when you award those prizes. And sometimes you always have a few surprises up your sleeve when you do that, which is, by the way, if you're listening, the evening finals is when the judges decide and when the prizes are given. So you know, if you stay till the end, you'll know who won.
That's correct.
So that's something to look forward to, again, coming up on Saturday evening for the finals for the La Delenia competition. And the judges, always a highlight for me, because you bring in people who are working at the top of the industry, whether it's musical theater or opera. Who are your judges for this year?
The panel always consists of a director or a producer, a conductor or a coach, and a major performer. In the category of performer this year, it's going to be Schuler Hensley, who made his first big splash as Judd in the Hugh Jackman Oklahoma. I remember seeing him in London when it opened, and I thought I was seeing a different show, because wow. I had never seen a Judd who broke your heart as well as scared you to death. And he's been on Broadway ever since, and he trained as an opera singer at Curtis, so he brings both worlds to the panel. The director is Anne Bogart, and she just did Lost in the Stars in Los Angeles with two of our recent winners of the competition. I was out there for that, and it was really spectacular. Got great reviews. She directs at Glimmerglass all the time. She's a double, triple threat, too, because she does opera, and she has her own theater company, and she's head of the directing program at Columbia University.
Wow.
The third judge filling the coach-conductor slot is Rob Berman, who is the musical director of Encores at City Center in New York, and he's returning for the sixth time, and of course has lots of experience as a Broadway musical director, too.
He's going to be music directing Jerome Maras's, is it called The Golden Apple, coming up next month.
Right.
And, I mean, he's right, he's doing it all. He's one of the major music directors in New York. So, and I think for the kids to get, the artists to get to perform for him, oftentimes you see, if you look at the productions that he directs, you often will see a former Lenya competition participant in the cast.
Absolutely. He's been employing our finalists for a long time. He says that they're so well trained and such quick studies, and they can both sing and act, so they're a sure bet.
And one thing about Schuler Hensley, I noticed that he at one point starred in Phantom of the Opera in Germany.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I was reading his bio, and I thought, is that not perfect for this particular competition?
Absolutely.
So he's going to be an interesting judge. So those are the judges for the 2017 Lenya competition. You also mentioned that you have a very special guest of honor this year.
We do. She's no stranger to the competition. She was a judge at the first one. She was, according to La Delenia, the dream Kurt Weill singer, and because she didn't try to imitate Lenya. And it's, of course, the legendary soprano Teresa Stratus. She has judged the competition 10 times, half of the competitions. And so this year I thought, let's give her a break from that sort of pressure-filled role, and let's let her enjoy the competition as our honored guest.
And she starred at the Met in what production?
In the Mahogany, which was okay. The first time the Met did it. That was 1979. And right after that, when Lenya was so impressed with her, she gave Stratus a album of music that had never been published or was forgotten. And Stratus did a recital of those things at the Whitney Museum in New York, and then Nonesuch recorded it as the unknown Kurt Weill. And I don't think there was a major prize that recording didn't win.
Wow.
And then she continued with Strata Sings Kurt Vile, another album for Nonesuch. Then she recorded the Seven Deadly Sins as a video, and she kept singing Vile whenever she had an opportunity.
So we're looking forward to being in her presence.
Absolutely.
Coming up on
and
April.
She's going to say a few words in reminiscing about the 10 competitions and how the competition has grown, and also why it's still the only competition that she's agreed to judge.
Wow. Interesting. I'm Marianne Carberry, and with me is Kim Kawaki, who is president of the Kurt Vile Foundation, which sponsors every year the La Delenia competition, a competition for singing actors, the finals of which take place every April here in Rochester at Kilburn Hall, and it's coming up again this year, the 20th, on April 22nd. And my favorite part of talking about this competition is really stems from people will ask me, what's it like? You try to explain to people what it's like. It's really not possible to explain it. But first of all, I think if you want to attend the La Delenia competition, you really have to attend the daytime competition. That's really the integral part of it, because it's the complete performance for each contestant. There's only highlights in the evening.
Correct.
So that's my little, I'll throw that in.
Thank you.
And it starts at 11 in the morning at Kilburn and runs until 3:45 in the afternoon, correct?
Correct.
With a break for lunch. And
right.
Those of us who've been going for years, we used to be a hearty band, and we'd bring our little paper bags and our little lunches, and we'd sit in the Great Hall, or if it's a nice day, you can go outside and have our lunch, so there's a nice little break. But we all would come, and you start to recognize people. It's starting to get more popular to come during the day as word has spread. But still, people will say, how is it you'll go spend a whole day doing this? So I wanted Kim to kind of delve into what it is about this competition that makes it different from a regular singing competition. For instance, I liked what Barry Singer, who was a writer for Opera News, he came to the competition in 2014, and he wrote just a perfect article about the competition. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, quote, "The La Delenia competition asks singers to do the impossible. It gives each contestant 15 minutes, a veritable lifetime, on a stage and asks them to create their own one-person musical narrative." Now, that's just a paraphrase of what he said. Can you tell us what you expect of each contestant in their 15 minutes during the daytime round?
Well, I think the basis for the competition is the diversity of repertoire and the diversity of performance styles, because they must do a piece from an opera or an operetta and two pieces from the American Musical Theater, one contemporary and one from what we call the Golden Age, basically before Hair. Mm-hmm. And then they have to sing at least one Kurt Vile number. They have 15 minutes maximum. They can do these in any order, and they must do all four for the judges during the daytime. In the evening, the judges will ask them to repeat one or two of those, often something that the judges have a question about. But the real numerical scoring that sort of divides the 14 into the groups of contenders, or maybe not this year, that's really decided during the daytime round, when all four selections are scored from 1 to 10 by the judges, and then they each give yet a fifth score, which is based upon difficulty, variety, the languages that are presented, and the diversity of vocal production and idiomatic singing and that sort of thing.
And when person is looking for, let's for instance say they really soprano really likes Kurt Vile's That's Him from One Touch of Venus, but it was written for mezzo soprano. Can she get a version of it for rearranged for soprano and do that?
They can. Not for all repertoire, because in opera it is rare that you as an opera singer are allowed to transpose a Verdi aria down, because critics and audiences would know it. And the same thing is true with Weill's operas. And small transpositions don't really change character, but if you take a vocal number and transpose it down a fourth, like Lenya did in her later years, it sounds like a different character. It's no longer a girlish soprano. It's an older, mature sound. So what we basically suggest is that for certain categories, transposition is okay, but for others, do so at your own risk.
And part of the article from Opera News talked about making your presentation believable, which would then be you need to pick an opera aria that's believable to the way you look. So then there's that whole bag of whatever that you have to know. You have to know what works for you.
You have to know the character. You have to know the plot and situation, because we do say that you should be able to be cast believably in that role, playing that character in a professional setting. So we often have people who don't know any better in the preliminary rounds. A young man who's 22 comes out and sings September Song. The first lyric is, "When I was a young man courting the girls." They don't understand that that's a laugh line when someone that young sings it. And it's not appropriate. Same thing is true for a woman who sings Losing My Mind from Follies, which is clearly something for a 50-ish mature woman. And, a 23-year-old really can't pull it off. Believably.
Yes. And the other thing that you'll notice when you go is that of these four songs, it has to be so crafted. If you open with something from Oklahoma that's very upbeat, you don't want to follow that with another upbeat. You want something soft and compelling. And so you want there to be transitions between the songs. And you also want to pick songs that are a good vehicle for your acting ability, correct?
Correct.
And not all songs do that.
Choosing the four numbers is probably the most challenging part of the competition for any contestant, and also the one that is crucial for how well you'll do in any given year. Sometimes it takes competitors 4 or 5 years before they figure it out and before they actually get the right combination of four numbers. Last year, one of the winners, Jim Shubin, it was his fifth competition. He was in the finals 3 times, and he finally got it right. 4 strong numbers that were diverse.
Right. And so that's something when you go, and the more often you go, you get a sense of the ones who are starting to get it and the ones who really have a command of what works for them and what they can really give a believable performance. The whole believability thing is just so critical. And sometimes a very young performer gets it. It just depends on the artist, whether they just get it somehow. Question about, are there extra points for singing in another language, correct?
Yes, not specified, but that's a factor in this fifth category.
Because much of Weill's repertoire is either German or French, so they can choose to do that, correct?
Right.
And of course, opera, you have a choice there as well, whether to do English or the original language.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you can look forward to that. And by the way, during the day, many of the people in the audience, we make little notes to ourselves, and we think we know who's going to win. And we're almost never right, but
well, I don't know about that I hear from a lot of people at breaks and so forth, and they tell me how they've scored, and I can't say anything, of course, about whether they're on the right track or not. But I usually get 8 or 10 emails the following morning saying, "Well, the judges were right except for one," or something like that.
I find it's getting tougher. Early on, the winners seem to be more apparent. And as the competition has grown, it becomes more difficult to know who's going to win. So
absolutely,
that's something you can look forward to. We talked a little bit about what the judges' criteria are. Their vocal abilities and things like that. What about their stage presence, the way they move through the space, whether they command the space, because it is an acting, there's an acting component to it. Is that judged as well?
Absolutely. There are as many bad acting habits as there are bad vocal habits or vocal technique. And we advise the judges that they're both equally important in terms of deciding a winner. I think that the one aspect that divides the top people from the others, surprisingly enough, has nothing to do with singing or moving. It has to do with thinking. Because an actor, when they sing a line or they speak a line, it is the thought that has to motivate that. And if the thought isn't there, it becomes recitation, becomes memorized, and it's no longer believable. So you'll find that the judges, when we're discussing the performances, they'll say the thoughts weren't strong enough, the thoughts weren't loud enough for us to understand.
I recall Megan Marino.
Megan Marino.
Who, by the way, just made her premiere at the Met.
Yes.
And I think it was Rusalka?
I think so.
Yes.
Although she's sung there other
Has
seasons.
She?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But in that role, I think it was her debut.
And she, I think it was her third appearance at the competition. And she sang a song I'd never heard before by Kander and Ebb,
yep.
A Quiet Thing.
A Quiet Thing.
Which was so just amazing. And I spoke with her afterwards, and she told me that at the final, the semifinals, the judges had worked with, because they often work with the semifinalists about choices. And she had been sitting in a chair, I think, or something, and they had her move and stand by the piano. Something very simple. And she said it transformed the performance, whatever they suggested for her. And it was such a moving thing. I still remember it to this day.
Well, and I remember that moment at the semifinals. It was actually Vicky Clark, who was her judge coach. And Megan was sort of singing it like an aria. And Vicky made her ask her to speak the lyrics. And then Vicky went over to her and simply put her hand on her heart. And Megan started to sob. And Vicky said, "What are you thinking? What are you feeling?" And Megan put it into her own words and she said, "That's what the song means to you. Now tell us what it means." And it transformed it completely. That is what makes the competition worthwhile for me, is that sort of metamorphosis.
Right. And the truth is that, you know, opera singers, my daughter studied musical theater, so I kind of know about some of this stuff, where it's always about what are you trying to say in musical theater? Whereas with the training in opera, there's so much on the technique.
Right.
So I think there's kind of emerging, the musical theater people have to work a little bit more on technique. And the opera people have to work a little bit more on the acting side. So that's the challenge of the La Delenia competition, correct?
Absolutely. And that's actually the motivation why I designed the repertoire requirements as I did. In 1998, I was so tired of going to Broadway and hearing TV personalities who couldn't sing do musical theater, and going to the opera and hearing opera singers who cared nothing about the text or about the character, just the voice. And then worst of all for me were all those recordings of American musical theater with the opera singers destroying the lyrics. And what really made American musical theater what it is when lyrics became as important as the music. And it's that balance that we're trying to encourage with these performers.
You said it all. And I think when you go, you have a sense of that. Although I will say that having been in the audience for many years, I had a sense for a long time that I'm going to ask you this question. How would you describe the typical La Delenia competitor, contestant in terms of their background? My sense is that they are usually studied vocal competition, undergrad, may have a master's. A lot of them have master's in vocal performance. A few of them have BFAs in musical theater, but probably 75% come from the opera side sort of. the conservatory side, and I wonder how you would describe the typical La Delenia competitor.
I don't know if there is a typical winner, anyway. Competitor, maybe. In the early years, it was mainly opera singers. But I think that was because the musical theater folks thought they didn't have a chance. And when some of the winners were trained in musical theater, I think of Rebecca Jo Loeb, who went through the University of Michigan musical theater program. She now is an opera singer. She doesn't do musical theater much, but at that point she was a musical theater singer, and that's why and that's why she won. I would say in the last 10 years it's about 50-50. And I think that's also motivated by the fact that these young singers look around the world and they see that every opera company, except maybe the Met, is doing musical theater as part of its repertoire now. And you double your chances to be employed if you can do both. So it behooves them to learn how to sing both repertoires. I think the days, and I heard Renee Fleming say this during a masterclass at Eastman, the days where you are labeled with what the Germans call a Fach, where you, if you're a lyric soprano, you can only do a certain number of roles, and they all have to basically have the same vocal production, and you pretty much sound the same from aria to aria. And if you go to an opera competition, you get four arias, and the vocal technique is supposed to be the same throughout so that there's no disruption. We're trying to get exactly the opposite. We'd like to have four numbers that are as different from each other as possible.
Question about the evening finals, just because everybody asks this question. You said the judges, they determine what the artists perform in the evening, usually?
Now they do.
Okay.
'Cause 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. We let performers choose what they wanted to within a time frame. But at that point, the judges still had the option of having callbacks between the daytime round and the evening round. So if they had a question about something going wrong, if the tempo was too fast, if they were standing so far upstage that we couldn't actually hear the lyrics, that was their chance to do some coaching. We decided that was unfair to the people who were not called back to fix things. So now we can use the evening performances to communicate to the contestants something that the judges would be looking for that would be different in the evening. And we do that.
With pretty much everybody across the board then?
Pretty much everybody across the board. If something about, the numbers they're singing requires some adjustment or might improve with some adjustment.
Just following up on what we've been talking about, the larger voices that have been sort of always present at La Delenia, and now more the musical theater voices where they're accustomed to being mic'd, and so you don't have to have these great large voices. Last year was probably the perfect illustration, which is why my mouth was hanging open when you announced not one but two winners, and probably at the opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of who they were, both outstanding artists. And maybe you could talk a little bit about the two winners last year.
Indeed. Brian Vu had been a Glimmerglass young artist and trained as an opera singer, and he had been in the competition several times before. He is now going to be singing with Houston Grand Opera, and he was in the finals of the Metropolitan Opera competition last year. He sang a big Verdi aria at our competition, and it was hard to imagine anyone, being so advanced vocally at that point. He also did some really daring things with the musical theater, in that he did Where Is the Life That Late I Led from Kiss Me, Kate, And he went full out with that. Maybe not employable on Broadway, but full out. And then he did a remarkable bowler hat from Pacific Overture. So controlled, so reserved, so authentic. And so that was quite a package. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there's Jim Shubin, who came off the Sound of Music National Tour to be in the competition for the fifth time. And he is a consummate Broadway singing actor. He's never going to have a career in opera, but every one of his four numbers was so beautifully presented. And he was the one who I thought of all the competitors last year actually managed to make us laugh and cry and get angry.
Right. I happened to write down what the judges said about him when they awarded him his first prize. They said, quote, Jim's performance embodied the competition's motto of, quote, singing the story. He gave a riveting performance, showed engaging presence and effortless communication, and yet still seemed as if he was inventing it all on the spot.
Exactly.
And that was really true. He definitely did that. He was a true actor.
Yes.
And again, a smaller voice. And so that's the two sides of the La Delegna coin that you see when you go to this competition, especially during the day. You will see that. Finally, looking just at the broader musical scene, how do you see the La Delegna competition affecting the broader scene? If you could sort of think of something maybe that how it's affected or had an impact on the opera and musical theater scene.
Well, I think it's encouraged a number of voice departments at major schools to think differently about the repertoire that they allow their students or encourage their students to sing. Certainly true at one of the greatest of training schools for both musical theater and opera is the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And they are now a major supplier of contestants to the competition. Another one is the Manhattan School of Music, which just started its musical theater degree program, and they've long had an opera degree program. And we get a lot of contestants from Manhattan. So teachers are now encouraging their students, I think, to master the skills that are rewarded by the Delegna competition.
Great. And do you feel that there's more of an awareness of Kurt Weill's music? Is that, are the kids kind of the competitors taking that with them to some extent, do you think?
Definitely, because we see in programs and in schools and conservatories that Kurt Weill crops up on recitals so much more often since we started the Delegna competition. And we find that the Delegna winners, partially because we advocate for them, are being employed around the world to sing Kurt Weill because people know that they could actually do it idiomatically.
And the winner, don't the winners get a special invitation to Glimmerglass each summer?
No, only Glimmerglass is the recipient of what we call a sponsorship of a young artist and in some cases just an artist,
okay.
a mature artist. Last year, for example, the lead in The Crucible was Brian Mulligan, world-famous baritone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was the winner of the first Delegna competition
Wow.
in 1998. And we had last summer Brian Vu there in La Boheme. He was the Delegna young artist, whereas
okay.
Brian Mulligan was the Delegna artist. So we had the first and the last winner at Glimmerglass last summer, and we give Glimmerglass a donation to support.
Okay.
Those
okay,
because
I know you do see the names. And just once you start going, you'll see the names. But for instance, from 09, Lauren Worsham, who placed second in the competition. She was a Tony Award nominee for the musical A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. That was a major accomplishment very soon after she was at the competition here.
Absolutely, and just was in Big River at Encores. She's now a major force in the Broadway theater in New York.
Right. And Rebecca Jo Loeb, you mentioned her. That was one of the great season. I mean, that competition, she wasn't the only one. It was just Ariella Morgenstern, and there were several of them that year. It was quite a year.
And Rebecca just made her Met debut this year.
I know. So I try to mention that on the air. If I hear their names, I mention it. Alan Hodzovic, I think that's
right?
How you name it. He performs in, he was a first place winner in 2009, but he performs in Germany, correct?
He does. He's mm-hmm. a German singing actor and hardly ever is unemployed. Just goes from theater
to
theater. Very talented.
And finally, looking at somebody who's just had an amazing career, Zachary James. He's a bass, very tall, just compelling looking. And his career has just been extraordinary in both opera and musical theater.
And when he won third place that year, he was already in South Pacific as Stewpot, the bass in the Seabees there. And since that time, he's been concentrating mostly in opera and doing very well, especially contemporary opera.
Very interesting. And we couldn't possibly talk about the La Delania competition without talking about the piano accompanists.
Yes, these two who have been with us now all but one or two times in the last 10 years are so phenomenal. One is Shane Shagg, who is the staff accompanist at the Manhattan School of Music and plays all over New York. And the other is Lyndon Meyer, who graduated from the Eastman School with a master's degree and then was on staff there. But I got to know him because he was my assistant and accompanist for my musical theater workshop for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And these two are simply phenomenal. I don't think I heard a wrong note from either one of them in, 6, 7 years of playing.
It's just, I mean, many of us will say it's worth it just to see them because the absolute demands of the repertoire that they're playing, and they have what, one rehearsal with each contestant?
1 hour rehearsal.
Oh my gosh. And there's nobody to turn pages. They're turning their own pages.
Well, they could have one. We offer that.
Oh, you do. Okay.
But I think they prefer to do it themselves so that there are no mistakes. They're just really wonderful.
That alone, you can look forward to that. It's just incredible. So there's so many things to look forward to at the La Delania competition. The 2017, the 20th competition is coming up on Saturday, April 22nd at Kilburn Hall at the Eastman School of Music. We hope to see you all there. The daytime round is not to be missed. Starts at 11 o'clock, and we should mention that people start lining up at least by 10:30, maybe even earlier than that. But you're pretty much guaranteed a seat for the daytime rounds.
Right.
At this point, unless something crazy happens, you'll get a seat for the daytime. The evening round, you really have to plan on arriving at least 45 minutes early, wouldn't you say?
Well, I remember 2 years ago, I walked out into the hall in front of Kilburn, and the ushers told me that there were 265 people in line at 7:15 p.m. And we weren't going to open the doors until 7:30. And I said, we have to open early because we can't make these people stand in line.
Right.
They were zigzagging down the hall. And so we did open early. But for the evening, do get there early because it is free. And there are no tickets, and so it is first come, get a seat.
And the other thing is there's always an RPO the same night, so getting a place to park, you have to plan way ahead for all of this, so if you want to be there for the night. But we hope to see you all there for the daytime round. And just to repeat again, the La Delania competition coming up on Saturday, April the 22nd, 2017, in Kilburn Hall at the Eastman School of Music. Kim Kowalki, president of the Kurt Weill Foundation, thank you very much for a wonderful conversation about this fabulous event.
Thank you, Marianne. It's been a delight.